folks. I am Jake Mosier, and this is the Super Mosier Brothers Show, a podcast where two brothers and best friends take their lifelong passion to talk about video games away from the family dinner table and to the microphone. Today, there is just one brother and one best friend. It's me. I am my own best friend today. I think we've talked about this in other podcasts. I'm not entirely sure. My co-host, my brother, my best friend, Sam Mosier, has a shit ton of travel happening through the latter half of February into the first half of March. And he got in from the airport, I want to say around like 7:30, and then has to leave tomorrow morning at 6:15 a.m. And he's been gone for a few days. He's going to be gone for roughly a week and a half. And frankly, why would I make him do this? Why would I make him spend an hour and a half, potentially 2 hours of his evening, talking about video games? He needs a break. He needs a breath. But I have a lot less busy week. I am not traveling. I have the time to record an episode. And frankly, we skipped an episode because I was sick. That is my bad. And then we had an episode that was fully review, which means we've missed a lot of news. We've missed a lot of opportunities to talk about the games we've been playing, the things we've been watching, all the news that is happening. And frankly, I didn't want to skip another week of that. As I said, Sam has a lot of travel. Who knows what will happen next week? I think we will have an episode. I'm pretty sure we will have an episode. But just in case we don't, I wanted to get something on the books. I care about you, listeners. I want you to have something to put in your ears. Whoever's listening, I appreciate it. Let's get into it. Our housekeeping for our news stories this week. I'm going to keep them abbreviated. I'm sure you don't want to listen to me monologue for too long. I'm going to be talking briefly about the recent Sony layoffs. When I wrote what I want to talk about today, I originally had just the Sony layoffs, and I'm going to keep it that way. Basically, 2 hours after I wrote that down, the EA layoffs happened. As we kind of talked about, I think probably this point 3 weeks ago, layoffs are going to keep happening, and we are going to continue to have the same stance, which is that they suck. I'm going to get into my thoughts on them a little bit here, but there's a good chance that next week's main topic will be a discussion with Sam and I, focused on the state of the industry. Kind of get into the weeds about why these layoffs keep happening, what these studios and publishers and big business heads at the top decisions, what decisions they could be making to fix this, and which ones they probably will make instead. I'll talk about that. Not the most fun topic, but one that I think is important and interesting to get into. And then I'll be talking about the Nintendo Partner Direct, something a lot more fun, something that I had a good time watching. You're probably wondering, what are you going to talk about for your main topic then if you're all alone? Folks, I've been playing a lot of Helldivers 2, so I will be giving you a mini review of Helldivers 2. Feel free to write in any questions after you listen to this episode. I would love to answer any questions. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the game. Lastly, thank you to anyone who is listening. It means so, so much. If you enjoy our show, please subscribe to it in your podcast feeds, leave us a review, share with your friends. It would mean the galaxy to us. Let's get started. We're going to start with IGN. This comes from Wesley Yinpool. Headline reads, Sony announces significant PlayStation layoffs affecting 900 staff, London studio to close. I went through this article early today and copied a bunch of sections that I found interesting and wanted to jump off of. Please go give the full article a read, including the many other articles about this, if you want to more understand why they made the decision they did, and probably read some good critiques on this decision. But I'm going to get into it. Sony has announced a significant round of layoffs affecting around 900 staff, or about 8% of its global PlayStation workforce. The layoffs affect a number of PlayStation studios, including Insomniac, Naughty Dog, Guerrilla, Firesprite, and most significantly, PlayStation's London studio. Alongside the layoffs, a number of in-development games are canceled, Sony said. In a blog post, outgoing Sony Interactive Entertainment boss Jim Ryan issued an update on what he called a, quote, difficult day at our company. We have made the extremely hard decision to announce our plan to commence a reduction of our overall headcount globally by about 8%, or about 900 people. Subject to local law and consultation processes, Ryan said. Employees across the globe, including our studios, are impacted. U.S. employees, this is no longer part of that quote. U.S. employees will be told today if they still have a job. As of you listening to this, this will be roughly a week ago. In the UK, where labor laws require a consultation process for mass layoffs, Sony has proposed shutting the PlayStation London studio, which had previously created VR games, entirely. Ryan didn't confirm this in his email, but it seems likely London Studios' co-op PlayStation 5 game, set in a modern fantasy London, is canceled. I want to provide some additional context there. The London studio is not officially shut down, but there's a high likelihood that it will be shut down pending that proposal. And then another important note that I will kind of add on to at the end of this story is US, hey, guess what? You don't have any job anymore. Get the fuck out. In the UK, hey, we really want to get rid of these people. We need a consultation. We need you to confirm that we can do this. And then lastly, obviously, PlayStation, a Japanese company, Sony, a Japanese company. What are the laws there? This has come up with recent layoffs when people bring up the pretty classic, pretty frequently referenced Nintendo story now about how when Nintendo was going through their struggles during the Wii U phase and how Miyamoto and I'm not sure who the other head boss was at the time took a pay cut in order to keep layoffs from happening, or at least a mass amount of layoffs from happening. While that is incredibly impressive in comparison to what's happening here, Japan has much different laws around how they handle layoffs. I would argue much better laws, one that would reduce a lot of the stuff we're seeing here. They require companies to take a lot more steps before taking drastic layoffs like this. They consider that a last-ditch effort in order to save a company. And one of those things that can happen beforehand, CEOs taking pay cuts. They investigated a lot of other routes. So just wanted to give you a little bit of perspective on that. Feel free to read up on Japanese labor law if you're curious. Moving on, Ryan also announced layoffs at fellow UK studio Firesprite, which is working on a new narrative game. The status of that game is currently unknown. Elsewhere, Ryan announced reductions in various functions across SIE in the UK. In a separate blog post, Herman Holst, head of PlayStation Studios, confirmed the layoffs impact Spider-Man developer Insomniac, The Last of Us developer Naughty Dog, as well as Sony's US-based technology, creative, and support teams. Horizon developer Guerrilla is also affected. Holst confirmed some games have been canceled as part of a, quote, reevaluation of how we operate, end quote, but failed to name them. He said, "We looked at our studios and our portfolio, evaluating projects in various stages of development, and have decided that some of those projects will not move forward. I want to be clear, the decision to stop work on these projects is not a reflection on the talent or passion of team members. Our philosophy has always been to allow creative experimentation. Sometimes, great ideas don't become great games. Sometimes, a project is started with the best intentions before shifts within the market or industry result in a change of plan," end quote. The final part of the story I want to note, according to Bloomberg, along with Sony's massive layoff of 900 employees, the company has also canceled a live service game, Twisted Metal. It was reportedly in early development, but wasn't given the full green light over at Firesprite, which also suffered an unspecified number of layoffs. So to sum all of that up, which is still not the entire story, 900 employees laid off across a variety of PlayStation studios. One of them, London Studio, in the UK has a potential of being shut down completely, most likely will happen. Their action multiplayer co-op game that they were working on, most likely canceled. Confirmed by Jason Schreier, the live service Twisted Metal game, which was being worked on by Firesprite, which was hit with layoffs, is also being canceled. So where the fuck do we go from here? If you follow the games industry at all, this has been a fucking barrage of layoffs across the entire industry for weeks. I mean, technically it's been like a year now, because this was a 2023 trend carried over into 2024. I would argue it has been worse in 2024, as the companies that have been hit with layoffs are larger companies, and by proxy mean more people are getting laid off. They've also come at a higher succession. As I noted at the beginning of the episode, EA announced a large amount of layoffs a day after Sony announced all the layoffs. It has been brutal. And so my main takeaway from this, one that Sam and I will get into next week together and have a conversation about, is I want to establish again, this sucks, and I feel for all the people out there, because not only are they losing their jobs, whether they moved across the country, whether they uprooted their family, whether they took a risk, whether they took a pay cut, whatever the situation was, they took a risk to work in an industry they most likely love. And because of how many layoffs we are seeing and the reducing we are seeing across the industry, a lot of these people might not be able to find a home. They might not feel comfortable finding a home in the industry anymore. They might feel it is too risky of a life choice to put themselves into this world, and that sucks. It sucks that so many people are not going to be able to create and get their ideas expressed or their talents expressed in an industry that I love so much. That sucks. My main takeaway here is that as many people reasonably get very angry on the internet about how this is handled and about how the people up top probably don't understand the decisions that should be made here or aren't, and on another hand, aren't willing to make the hard decisions for themselves in order to protect the livelihoods of these people and keep their hardworking good employees there. Main takeaway is we live in a broken system. It sucks. Growth will always take priority over people, profits over livelihoods, and empathy. They keep demand. We can keep demanding better, and I think everyone should. Unfortunately, I don't think they're going to listen because these companies suck, but keep doing it. Keep demanding better, but don't expect it. And I think we need to do our best to find hope in a new generation of game developers, business-minded individuals that will do what they can to enact change. This is a much different shade, a much more nefarious shade of a very similar conversation Sam and I had about the Game Awards. I won't put words in their mouth. This is completely my opinion, where we looked at the Game Awards and how people reacted, how there wasn't an emphasis on developers, but an emphasis on the companies. And maybe Sam and I will tackle this week, but that is the complication of any industry that is a mix of art/entertainment and business. And unfortunately, where the scales lie are always going to be on the side of business. So back to what I was saying about the Game Awards, we talked about how, well, I understand why people are upset that we're not focusing on the developers. I think it would be cool to give them more time, but that's not what the show has been, nor does that seem to be Jeff Keighley's intention. So maybe we should look for somewhere else to put those efforts. And obviously, like I said, this is a much more serious, in my opinion, maybe some people disagree, I think it's a much more serious conversation, but in a much more difficult obstacle to overcome, because it's not just the games industry that's broken, it's the entire fucking capitalist system in which we live in. But I really hope that we can, not we, because I don't know how I can do this, someone who doesn't work in the games industry and just has a podcast, but if I was the most optimistic human being alive, I would love to hope that future game developers, future business people who enjoy games and find themselves eventually involved in high decision-making at these companies, do what they can to enact change on an individual level. There's not many companies out there, but there are companies that do exist that empower and value their employees over shareholders. Often that's because the shareholders don't exist for the companies. They are not a publicly traded company and they are able to make decisions just for them and their company. Often, even in those companies, the people at the top are still making selfish decisions that put more money in their pockets and hurt the people below them. But I can hope for a future in which the people that run these companies and make decisions can do it in a way that isn't going to uproot and harm so many people. It is unfathomable what a layoff can do to someone depending on the circumstances. There are some people who will be fine, who will be able to get another job and who have lived out somewhere for years and are in a fine financial state to make it for a few months. But there are some people who might have moved 2 months ago and moved there with all their savings and they were so excited to have a job and now they're fucked. And I just hope for a future in which we, either as a country, alter our labor laws to look maybe a little more like the UK, where at least it has to go through some sort of consultation appeal process where this is getting looked at, or even better, it looks like Japan, where, hey, you can't fire 900 people, you CEO who make millions of dollars. You need to take a fucking cut on your salary, and then maybe we can talk about that. Do I think that will happen? Probably not, because our country sucks. But I would love to see it happen, or at least I would love to see, even if our country can't make that change, I would love to see these companies make that change. I would love to see Herman Holst or Jim Ryan come out and say, hey, I'm going to take a 10%, a 20% pay cut so that we don't have to lay off as many people. Even better, as we talked about when the layoffs were happening last year, would love to see a situation in which these companies maybe do a little more forward thinking. Maybe they can see that, hey, infinite growth is not possible. So we should not hire almost 1,000 people that we do not need. We should, instead of dreaming for this infinity that is never reachable, let's just continue working with the great staff we have and expanding in ways that we know are sustainable. There are more things we'll talk about next week in relation to this, in relation to EA, in relation to all the other layoffs that have happened. I'm going to pose something right now, which is going to at least be the crux of my argument next week with Sam. Will companies take the right message from this? I would argue that is the biggest question here. My unfortunate answer is probably not. We see many industries go through the same fucking cycle where it is, okay, it's an upswing. Projections are looking good for the future. Higher, higher, higher. Grow, grow, grow. Oh shit, we overgrew. Layoff, layoff, layoff. Okay, things are looking good again. Let's try to grow, grow, grow. Get those numbers up. It happens over and over. But what I would love to see is a more sustainable system with a publisher who encourages smaller games and smaller budgets, ones that can still see large success but take less investment to create. Is that in an environment that we currently live in? No. As discussed in our long games episode, and by looking at what sells every year, I don't know if the mainstream public seems to have interest in buying those kinds of games at a rate at which would please these companies and their shareholders. Nintendo is slightly an exception. They have created an ecosystem where their players expect good games, but don't necessarily expect the biggest, most graphically impressive games. Yes, Odyssey is big. Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild. I think those are beautiful looking, huge games. Those fulfill some of it. But you look at a game like Luigi's Mansion 3, Animal Crossing. Graphically and scope-wise, those games are not massive, and they sold incredibly well. I don't know. I am not on the developer side. I have to imagine that the budgets on those games and the return they are getting are significantly less risky than some of these big budget projects that PlayStation, EA, Ubisoft, Xbox are taking on. That's what I want to talk about with Sam next week, is if that is the solution, if not focusing on these pixel-perfect movie-like graphics that are resulting in massive budgets. We'll talk about it next week. We'll get into it. But my hearts go out to everyone who is laid off. It absolutely sucks. If you have a voice, if you have a way to get anything out about this, fucking shit on these huge companies. They deserve it. This sucks. Moving on to our second story about a huge developer, Nintendo, one who fortunately has not seen layoffs. I am moving to Polygon with an article written by Carly Veloci. Apologies if I pronounce your last name wrong. Headline reads, all the biggest announcements from Nintendo's February 2024 Partner Direct. That Partner Direct, I think, happened on the 21st. It was a week from when I'm recording right now. It was 23 minutes long. My overall thoughts, pretty darn good. I think I have become pretty well acquainted with what to expect from most Direct-type showcases. I don't even mean just Nintendo. I mean State of Plays, Xbox stuff. I'm just pretty familiar with what we're going to get, and I usually come out pretty positive because of that. Occasionally, there are the duds like last year's PlayStation Showcase, but this one slightly exceeded my expectations. It's a Partner Direct, which, for those of you who don't know, means that we're basically getting all third-party games, all games that are not worked on by Nintendo. It is a way to kind of fulfill that craving that those crazy Nintendo fans get for Nintendo Direct to get some advertising marketing out there for your upcoming release schedule when you don't have a ton to talk about first-party-wise. These, at least personally, have lost a little bit of an effect because at the beginning they were real exciting because at the time having a handheld that could run some of these games resulted in announcements that seemed crazy. I remember I think it was the first partner direct when they announced Doom and Wolfenstein The New Order for Switch, and I was just like blown away. I was like, that's so cool. I already played those games. I did not buy them, but it was really neat. Now you're just hoping that you can get a cool announcement or two. And I think we got that. Some side notes I want to note that has nothing to do with actually what was shown here. One, this is the first Nintendo Partner Direct that wasn't called a Nintendo Mini Partner Direct. So they did feel it was a little more substantial, which I find interesting, considering it was maybe only like marginally better than a lot of the other ones, but that's not a big deal. And then second, what I think is more interesting and what crazy Nintendo fans picked up on is that the intro graphic for this was new. And the reason that's important is they have only updated these every new generation. No, we are not in a new generation. And no, we have not had an opportunity on the podcast to talk about how the Switch 2 is probably fucking coming out in 2025. Sam and I will talk about that next week because I think it's a much more fun conversation to have with him considering all our bets and predictions and such. But it's different, which makes me think that they, I don't know, if obviously they are conscious of what they're doing here, but it seems like a little too soon. Like you had it ready and you just kept it because we're almost there. Pretty cool thing that people picked up on. But let's get into my highlights from the show. I'm not going to go through everything. As we talked about on two podcasts ago at this point, guess what? Some Xbox games are coming to the Nintendo Switch, baby. We opened with Grounded, which is coming April 16th. This is the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids multiplayer survival crafting game. I don't have much interest, but it's neat that it's coming to Switch. We have Unicorn Overlord. This is the Vanillaware game that Sam has on his fantasy team. The demo is apparently pretty good, so people are excited about that. Disney's Epic Mickey is getting a remaster / remake. I guess it's being described as a faithful remake. It is called Disney Epic Mickey Rebrushed. I'm pretty excited about this. Epic Mickey is one of those games that when Sam and I were growing up, I think Sam might have played it via Gamefly, but I mean, I am a Disney person. I don't want to call myself a Disney adult. I don't live and breathe Disney. I actually get angry with a lot of things they do because I think they have a lot of potential, and I like Mickey. I like Disney stuff, and especially when I was 10, when this game came out, there were very few games I was allowed to play because of my parents' decision on ratings and stuff, that I was so excited for this, and I think the reviews being slightly above average resulted in me losing my excitement. But now that it's getting this visual upgrade and I have started to refine what games I'm into, I might give this a try. I'm kind of excited. Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection was announced. That is coming out on March 14th. This is a collection of Battlefront 1 and 2 games that came out on the PS2. It is including their multiplayer maps, their single player stuff. It's just a port, maybe a slight remaster. But as someone who loved my Star Wars Battlefront game on the PSP, I would consider like dabbling into this if the multiplayer works really well, just for fun. I don't think I will play too much, but I might check it out. Scrolling through, maybe my favorite announcement, the most exciting thing, we're getting a new fucking Super Monkey Ball, baby. Super Monkey Ball Banana Rumble. This upcoming title offers over 200 stages, a new spin dash move, a new co-op mode, and robust character customization. You can either play in 4-player co-op for the first time, or you can join up to 16 players in a series of other mini games like racing. This comes out on June 25th. World of Goo 2 got a release date of May 23rd. I don't care much about that, but others might. We got a trailer for Another's Crab Treasure, Another Crab's Treasure, which is the Souls-like where you play as a crab who loves trash, which is pretty fucking funny. This comes out April 25th on Switch, but also on Xbox Series X, Xbox One, PC, and PS5. It'll be a Game Pass launch game. This looks cute, and maybe that's one of my larger problems with Souls-like games is I don't often love the aesthetic. It's something that's never appealed to me. I don't love fantasy. I don't love the gray, grim vibes. Another Crab's Treasure, an undersea, cute little souls-like. I'm kind of into it. Penny's big breakaway was Shadow Dropped. This is the 3D platformer made by the people who made Sonic Mania. Go play it. I have not yet because I'm playing other games and I do not have the time, but I'm very excited. I've heard mostly good things. I've heard it takes a bit of a getting adjusted to. It's really honoring its time, so the graphics might not be your thing. The controls might take a bit to get used to, but I love 3D platformers and I love Sonic Mania, so I'm going to give that a try. Pepper Grinder got a release date for March 28th. Apparently the demo is really fun. I think this is a Devolver Digital game, so go try that out. Maybe you'll find a new indie game you're excited for. It's about a pirate who's stranded on an island and needs to get some help. It's a retro-inspired platformer. Pentiment is the other Xbox game, which is coming to the Switch. That is coming out on February 22nd, which means it's already out. So go play that if you didn't have an opportunity to beforehand. New games are coming to Nintendo Switch Online. They're a bunch of rare games because Xbox is in the sharing mood. We are getting games like Killer Instinct, Snake Rattle and Roll, RC Pro-Am. I know Blast Corps is a game a lot of people like, and that is also coming. So get excited if that's your bag. And lastly, Endless Ocean Luminous. This is a sequel to the scuba diving series that came out in the Wii. It is a very relaxing scuba game. You don't do much besides scuba, to my knowledge. But this one has a multiplayer mode where you can scuba with up to 30 players. Pretty goofy stuff. This comes out on the Switch on May 2nd. Not my thing, but if it was ever free, I think it'd be fun to give a try. Not part of this direct, part of the Japanese direct. Mother 3 is coming to Nintendo Switch Online, which is really fucking funny because people keep asking for it. That's it. Please let me know what you thought of the direct. I think it was neat what they have. I'm excited to talk next week about what's happening with the Switch 2. I think it's very interesting in a year that it's very exciting so far. I think the game lineup has been great. But I know a lot of industry people are worried about what the second half of the year holds in terms of sales and outlook, and I don't think having that helps that, but personally, I don't care. It is time for our main topic, my review of Helldivers 2. I'm going to go to the good old Wikipedia page, baby. Helldivers 2 is a third-person shooter developed by Arrowhead Game Studios and published by Sony Interactive Entertainment. The game is the sequel to Helldivers, a 2015 top-down shooter. Helldivers 2 was released for PS5 and Windows on February 8th, 2024. It received positive reviews from critics and sold approximately 1 million units in the first 3 days after release. Unlike Helldivers, which is a top-down shooter, Helldivers 2 is a third-person shooter. Similar to the first game, players are able to select stratagems, airdrops players can call during missions, which include cluster bombs, sentry guns, shield generators. Friendly fire is always on. The game's armor system is inspired by real firearms fired against armored targets. There's multiplayer with up to 4 players and also features crossplay. Ooh, baby. Helldivers 2 is a game that I really wasn't excited for at all. I had heard relatively good things about the first game, but obviously this was a big change with the top-down to the third-person point of view, and there was, like, not any part of me that thought I was ever going to play this, and then this game fucking popped off in a way that I don't think anyone expected. I think most importantly, the weird thing here is that PlayStation didn't expect it. They didn't promote this game a ton. They didn't talk about it a ton. I don't think they knew what they had on their hands. I have a good feeling Arrowhead knew. They've been working on this game now, I guess technically for 9 years, probably more like 7 realistically. But they knew they had some hot shit, and they did. After this game skyrocketed on Steam concurrence, I think it's still in the top 5 or 10 with concurrent players right now. I was like, I'm probably going to jump in at some point. And then more people kept playing. And more people who don't play games. My girlfriend's roommate was like, you're going to buy Helldivers 2? People sending me TikToks. I don't have TikToks, so it takes a lot of effort to watch them. But I was like, oh, this looks pretty fun. Every podcast I'm talking to being so surprised about how much fun it is. I was like, I have to give it a try. And it's as good as everyone says it is. Helldivers 2 is an electric multiplayer game that does a lot of things that other multiplayer and, quote, live service games just don't do very well. So let's get into it. Why do I think Helldivers 2 works as a multiplayer game, and why does it work for me? One important point. It takes simple missions and puts them in a game that allows those missions to turn diverse as a result of those games' innate systems. What do I mean by that? You basically have three, at least from what I've played so far, and I've played roughly 17 hours, 18 hours, three kinds of missions. Which you have, like, defend the base missions, which is less of defend the base and don't all die, but you have to kill a certain amount of enemies. You have protect the scientist missions, which are, you're in a smaller contained area and you have to let these citizens out of a bunker and guide them to the escape area. And then you have what I'm going to call open missions, which is you are thrown out, dropped from the sky onto these procedurally generated areas, and you need to do some sort of objective, whether it's upload the data or load the missiles into the cannon. And then on those missions, there is a variety of side stuff you can do, outposts to tackle, certain kinds of currency to find. On a fundamental basis, yes, there is variation within those, but they're pretty simple and they're pretty similar. The only core difference is right now if you choose to go fight the bugs or the automatons. Otherwise, what you're doing is exactly the same. So how does this game not get boring? How does it not get repetitive? That is because of the game's systems. Just a fun fact that is related to what I'm going to get into in the future is that this game is built off an engine that is now discontinued. I think it's been discontinued since 2019. This studio knows how to work it, so they just kept using it, which I think is really neat. So back to what I was saying about simple missions turning diverse. If you create a foundation that is strong enough, it can be elevated by all of the other things that make your game special. I think that's one reason Fortnite is so popular, because I will tackle this a little bit later on. One thing that I think people love about PvP games is that even though you're visiting this in Fortnite, we'll use Fortnite as the easy example. COD also applies this in some way. You're visiting the same map or maps. You are using the same guns. You are seeing the same areas. Is that when you are playing a real human being, it can always change. What can happen has the opportunity to always be different. An opportunity for you to go, damn, I've never seen that before. Dang, I've never got a shot off like that before. I've never been pinched in that way. I've never worked with my team in this way before. Oh my gosh, that was so funny. I fell off the bridge and I somehow lived and then we won, etc. It's really hard to do that in a PvE game, because you are not playing against other real people. So the game has to be the one to provide that diversity, to provide that moment-to-moment excitement, intrigue, and surprise. And this game is able to do that with the systems it builds, with the stratagems, something that you have to strategically, especially on harder difficulties, choose with your teammates and use at the right times. Maybe most importantly, the friendly fire. Because of the friendly fire, this game isn't a PvP game, but it has a little bit of that feeling, because your friends or randoms, if you're playing with random people, can affect you in that way. Every game, there is this certain risk that the turret you threw is going to take out your teammate, that you threw your teammate, you threw their revive into a swarm of bugs, and they immediately die. It is those things that keep those simple missions refreshing over and over. Other things that keep those simple missions refreshing. This game has maybe the widest swath of difficulty options I've seen, nonetheless, in a multiplayer game. It essentially has 9 difficulty levels that you unlock once you complete one mission in the former difficulty level. There is what I would call 2 tutorial levels. It's not basic, but it's basically basic and easy. Basic is like you are tutorial, you're learning the game. Easy is like, okay, let's dip your toe in the water. Then there is medium and challenging, which is like the next tier of, okay, we're going to get you some currency. We're going to get you more acquainted, a little up the difficulty a little bit. And then there's hard and I think Suicide Mission, and then there's like three more. It gets incredibly difficult. The highest I've played is level 6, which might be Suicide Mission, I'm not entirely sure. But every time you go up a difficulty, they introduce new enemy types. The base enemies are harder. They introduce new objectives within the set I was describing earlier. You might have more steps to do. You might have a new enemy you need to take on. That, combined with everything I've already talked about, keeps it constantly refreshing. Next, the thing that amplifies everything else around the game. This game is genuinely thrilling. It is genuinely funny. And that is because of those systems I've talked about and the set dressing, the tone. This game is playing on the Starship Troopers thing. It is making fun of fascism. It is treating you as expendable at every single moment in a very funny way, but making you play through a character who is so committed to their country, who is probably doing awful things and bugging these poor alien planets or robot planets when they did not ask to be bugged with. And it's really funny. It creates for so many moments where I have laughed out loud, which I just don't do often when I'm playing games, when I am diving to make the drop ship and my character is yelling, "For the democracy!" Anything of that sort. Or I, like, accidentally hold a grenade too long, and right before he does that, he's like, "For the love of my country!" It is hilarious. It is so funny. And that set dressing makes every mission and the overall conceit of the game feel compelling in a way that other games don't. It introduces a, like, in-game camaraderie that doesn't exist in a Fortnite or a Destiny or many other PvE or PvP games because of this ongoing addition to the cause. Every time you play a mission, you are adding a 0.001% to taking down the automatons in the area. And the game, when you're in the home base, would be like, "We need to fight harder." And it is this fun group thing that results in, I think, a player community that is largely pretty positive. Another thing that works so well is they have a great variety of short and long form missions. I'm a busy guy. I don't always have time to do the 40-minute missions and check everything off and do three of those. On a Saturday night where I'm just hanging with the boys, awesome. Can't wait. On a night where I have work and I really just want to play for maybe 30 minutes, they also have shorter missions. You can do those, take out a certain amount of enemy missions, and then hop out. You can do a long-form mission and just knock out the main objective and then peace out. They do a really good job of building it in a way that you can have the type of experience you want to have. It's also immensely easy to hop in and out of. Oh no, I got kicked because there is a bug or the server broke down. Great, get back in the game, go to your friend, press join game, you drop out of the sky. Unlike a PvP game where you feel like now your team was at a disadvantage or you've fallen behind, it doesn't feel that way at all. You just go back in and start having fun. Or like, "Oh, my friends are getting on earlier, I'm going to be 10 minutes late." Doesn't matter. Hop in mid-game. It's awesome. In terms of the larger look at this game, it's relatively easy to feel like you're not getting behind. Now, I do think this will change. If you're going to hop into this game in April and you have friends who have been consistently playing since February, you're going to feel behind. It is going to take you a bit to feel like you are ready to join them on their missions. They can always come down and play with you. Frankly, as someone who is now playing on level 5 or 6 most of the times, it's not the most fun, but I do think you can, in one night, get them back up to where they need to be, relatively. And I think that's really neat, that it's a game but you're not going to feel like you're missing out and you can't hop into if you join too late. It's distinguishable. I know that sounds silly because every game is different, but I think doing a PvE, it's not an extraction shooter, but it kind of feels like one because of what you lose if you don't make it out. But it is more just like a mission-based game with a very unique tone. So shout out to it being its own thing and really committing to that vision. And then I've already kind of talked about the difficulty level balancing, which I think is a really good way to keep all level of player engaged. For those who want a really challenging experience, they can fight for that. And for those who just want to fuck around with their friends and have a good time, it's really good for that. So why does this game work as a live service game? I've talked about why it works as a multiplayer game, but I think trying to be a live service game is a much different objective. First off, and maybe most importantly, it's $40. I struggle all the time to convince friends to play or buy a game because it's $70. It sucks. I'm a much different gamer than a lot of my friends, but there are a lot of games I would love to play with them, but I do not have the opportunity to because they are $70. And that is a very high price point to convince someone to play. Do you know what's not a high price point? $40. It is much easier to convince someone to spend $40. And even though I have had one friend who is not having the best time because he's Call of Duty pilled and isn't willing to meet this game halfway, which is understandable. Every game doesn't need to be for everyone. Everyone has mostly loved it, and I appreciate the lower entry point. Another reason it works. You aren't coming to the game because of the Battle Pass. You are coming back because it's fun. At least that's how I feel. I am not playing this game to grind out to get the costumes, or I like getting new guns and new stratagems, and you need them for later levels, but I am coming back because I'm just having a good time, and there's no better feeling than playing a game just because it's fun. Another thing, everything is ridiculously well-priced. I have not felt once that I need to spend money on this game, but looking at the store, if I were to buy credits, I feel like I am getting worth what I'm paying for. Unlike Fortnite, where you're essentially having to pay like $10 a skin because of the way they structured the V-Bucks, I don't feel they do this here. You can easily buy what you want in the store or get the Battle Pass buying a normal amount of credits. And then another thing that makes it work so well is a good balance, kind of as I talked about earlier, of strategy, in-the-moment craziness, and chill chatty time. I've complained about Fortnite on previous episodes for there being too much downtime, and I think a reason is that sprinting mechanic I commented on, how I don't love the stamina. This game arguably has the perfect balance of those three things. There is legitimate strategy if you want it. On the harder levels, you do need to coordinate with your teammates, what stratagems you're bringing in, where are we going, how are we attacking this, where are you throwing stuff. It has the great spontaneity of in-the-moment stuff where it's like, oh, fuck, this went wrong, on the fly, make a decision, laugh out loud, I killed my teammate. Those things are really hard to naturally encourage in a game. And then lastly, it does have the chill, relax time. There are a lot of parts in the longer missions where you are just running across a map, and you will come across bugs, but it doesn't require much strategy, and you're able to catch up, talk, laugh, make some jokes. And that balance between those three things, and I think the one thing that it does better than a Fortnite in terms of the chill chatty time, is even in those moments where you're running across the map, you are often like shooting at bugs, so you're at least doing something that's a bit engaging while you talk, which I appreciate. And then, as I talked about and why I think this works as both a multiplayer game and a live service game, is that ability to be able to kill your teammates. Due to the potential threat of your own players, there is a level of stakes that disappears in other PvE games. I would need to do a little more research on this, but most PvP games, most PvP live service games, seem to be more successful than PvE games, at least the massive ones. I could be wrong on that, but that's just a hypothesis. Another reason I think it works, and I'll get into it a little bit later on, is I think the currency and the way the game communicates its microtransactions and stores to you is very minimal. It is not in your face. It mostly stays out of the way. And as someone who gets angry every time I turn on the Fortnite screen, I appreciate this game for not throwing it in my face. Do I think Helldivers will last a long time? I wrote down yes and no. I think this game will have the success of a Dead by Daylight. I think it will have a steady player count, definitely through this year, probably for the next few years. It'll obviously drop. I don't think it will stay as high as it is now, but I think it will maintain a steady player count, but it won't be the, quote, forever cash cow that some people might want it to be, but games are never meant to be. I don't think we'll see PlayStation dedicate years to this game in terms of marketing and support dollars, but I do think 5 years from now, Arrowhead will still be adding stuff and working on it pretty consistently. As a studio who has released one game in 2015, and this is their most recent game since then. I think they're committed to this. I think they are excited to continue to iterate and work on this game. I don't think we will see a Helldivers 3 within 5 years. I don't think we will see this game shut down or not getting worked on in a year. I think this is their thing for a while, and I'm happy for them because they found a hit. Now to get into some of the more gamey stuff that we haven't gotten into. Combat. It's an addictive loop. Two nights ago, I did the thing where it's like, okay, I really need to log off. And the other two people in my party were like, we'll do one more mission. And I was like, I guess I can do one more. And that balance of main missions, side missions, outposts within those larger missions is so good for a group. If you're on an easier difficulty, hey, let's go tackle this. I'm gonna go tackle this on my own. You go tackle this. Harder difficulties, let's go together. It is a good balance of, okay, we're gonna just do the main objectives, get out to get the medals, but we'll lose a little XP. We're gonna execute everything. We're gonna do everything perfectly, get 100%, get all that XP. That loop is so good. That build of, I need to get objective one, and then objective two, then objective three to get all the medals and give all my support to the democracy and really push back the automatons. It's effective to kind of get into the objective thing if you've never played this game. When you get to later difficulties, you kind of pick a campaign, so to say, to start, which includes three individual missions. Every mission you complete gets you more medals, more XP. They kind of build and build and build. And not only does it get you stuff, but it adds more percentage to taking down the automatons or bugs. I will say, there's one thing that we all don't like right now. The automaton save the citizens missions are fucking broken. They do not work. You get overwhelmed so quickly and you will die. Do not do the harder automaton save the scientist citizen missions. Oh boy, you will get fucked so quickly. Weapon variety. This game does a really good job in its progression loop of not keeping you away from things that are substantially better. You are going to get some weapons that are a little better just to do how they're balanced. I'm sure they might get nerfed in a little bit. But you are competent relatively at all levels. But the excitement of trying out a new gun and seeing if it fits your playstyle more and if it matches well with stratagems is really exciting. And I think a good carrot on the stick, along with the stratagems. They have probably over 50 stratagems, which are the things you throw out into the field, whether that be an eagle airstrike or a little guard dog or a like shield that will protect you and your players. You slowly unlock those as you play, and you can equip four per game, which I think is a perfect balance. It allows you to, you have to strategize, but you get to basically have everything you want. And the quickly acquainted of Helldivers learn that, hey, it's really not about the weapon you have equipped. This game is mostly about the stratagems. You can protect yourself in small situations, but in order to win, you need to use your stratagems effectively, which I think is really neat that the emphasis is not on gunplay, which feels amazing. It is punchy. It is everything you want in a third-person shooter, but it is focused on those stratagems, which is equally feels good. The choice to have them called via arrow presses on the PlayStation controller, which is something that you don't do in any other game. It's a thing you used to do with cheat codes, but you rarely ever have to think about now, is so singular. It is never not satisfying to get a quick stratagem off in a perfect throw. The physics-based systems in which if you throw a stratagem and it's not a sticky one and it hits a brick and falls back on you, or hits a robot and bounces back, or hits something and bounces further, that little extra cherry on top makes it so much more satisfying and so much more exciting. It adds to the emergent gameplay component of this game, where so many surprising things can happen in every game, whether it's from other players, whether it's from bugs, whether it's from the side missions. It's really exciting. The combat is phenomenal. I think it's really punchy. And if you like third-person shooters, I think this is one of the better ones. In terms of currency, which I think is like the other big part of games like this, there's three currencies. There's medals, which you get every single mission, and you can find within some missions. These are what you use to buy both the free battle pass and the paid battle pass to get armor, helmets, capes, emotes, flags, guns. then also rewarded via missions. You get they're like R credits, and those help you buy stratagems, which you get at a very, very reasonable rate. Perfect little upgrade loop or unlock loop. And then you have samples, which help you upgrade your stratagems, and those are all found in the map. They are not something you will earn unless you go out to find them. The fun thing about those is you have to keep them. If you die, you will drop them, and you have to go back and get them. So it is something that kind of incentivizes you to stay alive and make sure that you stay together so that someone can pick them up. I think this loop is also very good. It's not overwhelming. After 30 minutes, I understood how they all were being used. I think the dual battle pass system is very effective. It's doing what Halo Infinite is doing, which apparently some people don't like, but to me sounds great, which is that the paid battle pass is never going away. They are just going to continually add to it. Now, while yes, this will require you to get through the earlier stuff, and I could understand how to some people that could be a pain if you like the new stuff better. I think not adding to the fear of missing out part of an online service game is good. I would rather know that if I realize, hey, in a month, I'm still playing this game, I'm having a great time, let's give them the $10. Let's unlock some of that cool stuff that I saw. I can know that I can do that in a month, as opposed to, shit, if I don't buy it now, I'm never going to be able to get it. And that sucks. This is less to do with currency, more to do just with added content. They have committed, to my knowledge, of everything gameplay-wise is going to be free going forward. If they add biomes, free. If they add new enemy types, free. If they add new missions, free. That's fucking incredible, because those are the things that would bring me back. As someone who is just playing this game because he thinks it's fun, that is why I will go back. Obviously, if they add a cool suit, I'll be a little tempted to spend some money, but I am also happy just to come back because of this content. Those are my thoughts on Helldivers 2. It is immensely fun. I think it is worth the $40. I think it's worth giving a try. I do think it is significantly elevated by playing with friends. I've played with some randoms on the mic, and it's pretty good. They're very nice, but it is definitely elevated by having those you already enjoy being with and playing with them. But I think you should give it a try. Helldivers 2, probably my favorite game I have played from this year. Moving on to the rotating segment. Obviously, I will skip the one Sam and I will do, and I'm doing a good old bout of Hot Take Jake. This is where I bring not a hot take, kinda, something that I feel is maybe would be a little divisive amongst some people. Here we go. Nintendo pushing their console to 2025 is the best decision they could have made. Why do I say that? We'll get into it a little more next week. As we kind of talked about, the industry is an interesting place, and often games get pushed out when they're not ready. Systems get pushed out at wrong times. You look at Immortals of Avium, did not sell as well because of when it was released. You look at Sonic Superstars, did not do as well because of when it was released. Release and timing is so important. It is important to everything. It is important to movies, important to video games, important to music. It is timing that gets you the cultural cachet conversation you need to elevate something beyond what it would have already done on a foundational base level. The choice to push it to 2025 does a few things. One, as talked about in a lot of the rumors that have been going around, it gives Nintendo time to have the launch year lineup locked in. Instead of rushing their developers or putting out a half-baked game, they will have a launch lineup that has probably a phenomenal, finished 3D Mario, Mario Kart, etc. It will probably feel like the Switch 1 did. I think they are, for once, maybe going to try to replicate their past. As we kind of talked about on the predictions episode, I discussed how it's going to be weird because releasing in the fall is much different, because you have a much more limited times in people's heads to be like, okay, what do I get this year? Because everyone's minds are like broken in that way, where the new year starts and now it's a new thing. So I think it is a smart choice for them to prep their launch lineup and to make sure it's fully ready for that launch time. In addition, I think they can milk enough out of the current Switch that this move is fine. Obviously, it will not be the best Nintendo year. It will be more like 2020, where Animal Crossing was really the only big thing to come out. Will it even have an Animal Crossing size game? No, I don't think it will. But this is an opportunity for them to get every single last drop they can out of the current system, both from a software point of view and from a hardware point of view. And I don't think that's the worst decision when people are so excited for the next console. Those who are more passive gamers who aren't dying for the next system, maybe they'll hop in at the end. Maybe they'll be like, okay, this game interests me, or oh, maybe it's finally time, and just aren't paying attention to the news cycle. And why I think ultimately, like, none of this matters is all those people who are dying, including me, for the Switch 2, are going to buy it in March, just like they would have bought it in October. It's not changing how many people are going to buy this. It's really only changing when the money is coming in, and you might as well have the money come in when all your other ducks are in a row. So I think this is a good decision. I don't mind this. It gives me more time to catch up on other stuff. There's still some Switch games I want to get to. Can't wait to play Wonder. Want to play Pikmin 4. I want to play Super Mario RPG. There's some games coming out this year that I'm excited to touch. So by all means, take your time, Nintendo. I can't wait. Speaking of Nintendo, that Pokemon Direct or whatever, I think Pokemon Showcase, I don't know what they called their Pokemon things, happened yesterday morning, and they announced Pokemon Legends the pizza game. Just kidding. It is the Legends version of X to Y. It is that region. I'm not familiar with enough Pokemon to say it off the dome. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. I'm excited. I liked Legends Arceus a lot, and I think this one, if they are taking their time, like it seems like they are, it's coming out in 2025, I think this has the potential to be something really cool, especially if they're it said it's taking place entirely in the city. I really wonder if it's going to be like a city builder mixed with Legends, if it's going to be more of an urban type of Legends. Very interested. But that's it for Hot Take Jake. Moving on to Game Watch and Listen. What have I been playing? Speaking of Pokemon, I've been playing Pokemon Leaf Green on my Analog Pocket probably now for a few weeks, months. I've played about 9 hours, and I have decided I am done. I have a very complicated relationship with Pokemon. I loved it as a kid. I watched the cartoon on occasion. I collected a shit ton of cards, and Sapphire/Ruby was probably my most played game on the Game Boy Advance. Absolutely loved Pokemon. It was a large part of my personality, probably through second grade. And then I took a large break. I played Diamond and Pearl in like third or fourth grade and really liked that on my DS. Had a very, very good time. But I didn't really play a Pokemon game then until Sword and Shield. It's been like an 8 to 9 year break. And Sword and Shield, while I beat it and played 20 plus hours, was fine. Obviously, I don't need to rehash the graphical settings and graphical problems and all that stuff, but it was fine. The Pokemon loop, I don't know if it's worn on me because I'm older, if it's something that I never really enjoyed. I don't really know. But I was excited to go back to the older art style, because that's definitely something that I didn't love about the new ones and was excited to go back to. And while that did carry me through my 9 hours, it is lovely, and I wish they would go back to a pixelated art style or something with a little more actual design in it and not just pretty shitty-looking 3D models. I think it is the worst way to portray the loveliness that is a lot of the Pokemon designs. I don't think the gameplay loop is very compelling. I've played 9 hours and I'm still seeing the same fucking Pokemon in the grass that I've seen for way too long, which is really annoying when that is the reason I wanted to play. I was like, maybe I will just chip away at this for months and eventually get all the Pokemon. Well, I played for 9 hours and I kept seeing the same low level Pokemon. I'm doing the same way I played when I was a kid, which is using the first Pokemon I got over, over and over and over. And he's like level 38 and everyone is barely level 20. And that's not very fun for me, and I don't love grinding. I quit when I was like in a cave, and every 2 steps I kept getting stopped to fight the same Zubat, and I was like, I do not have the fucking time for this. I don't love the backtracking that's required in Leaf Green. You're going through a lot of the same areas. It gets kind of confusing. It's kind of like a maze, and those are not games I like, aka why I don't love Link to the Past. So I'm kind of sad that I'm stopping this, and I think there's an allure to Pokemon that I will never give up on, and I'm very excited for the next Legends game. Maybe that is just where my interest has moved to. I will still go back and probably play Sapphire at some point. If they ever remake Black and White, which apparently is supposed to be some of the best, I will eventually play them. But I think I think Pokemon just might not be the thing I remember it to be, and that's okay. Moving on to movies, I watched Bong Joon-ho's Memories of Murder. Oh boy. This is a movie that I liked and then really liked and then loved over both the process of watching it and then reading about it afterwards. If you don't know much about this movie, do not look anything up. I will give you the short pitch, which is that in, I think, South Korea, they are, long story short, there is a serial rapist slash murderer, and these two pretty shitty detectives are investigating it, and a detective from Seoul comes in to help. It is a murder mystery with a lot more happening than you think. That's not me saying there's a huge twist. That's me saying that Bong Joon-ho unsurprisingly weaves societal commentary with entertaining black comedy slash drama, weaves that in with just a compelling movie. And when I learned everything I learned afterwards, I was quite blown away. And a lot of things that I had seen were recontextualized and made me want to rewatch it immediately. If you are interested in a crime thriller from Bong Joon-ho, I think you should give it a try. Moving on to TV, Abbott Elementary. I don't have much to say. This is like a highlight of my week. Every week, I always laugh out loud multiple times. You can watch it on Hulu. You can watch it on ABC. This is a comedy, a sitcom following a group of students or a group of teachers at a Philadelphia public school, Philadelphia Elementary public school, and it's very delightful. Moving on to music, I don't think we talked about these yet. There were two Beyoncé singles released at the Super Bowl. 16 Carriages and Texas Hold'em. She also announced her new album, which seems to be country themed. As someone who doesn't like dance music and therefore didn't adore her last album, I liked it. There's a lot of good songs on there. I loved these two singles. Texas Hold'em is an extremely catchy pop country song, and 16 Carriages is a like lovely country tinged ballad. I fuck with this so hard and am so excited for the album. And then lastly, books, something that doesn't come up too often. I recently read, I think David Gran is his name, The Wager, the dude who wrote Killers of the Flower Moon. This book is also getting adapted into a Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio movie. It's fine. Part of that's user error. I think I just realized I don't love nonfiction books. But I will say the book, at least via the back of the book summary, is pitched as more of a court drama. It is not. It is a chronological retelling of everything that went down with The Wager. So don't go in expecting maybe a more uniquely structured book, one with a little more flair. It is just a chronological telling of everything that happened. So go read that if you have interest. I don't know if I necessarily recommend it, but to each their own. That's it, folks. Thank you so much for listening. I know that was an hour of me rambling, but I hope you got something out of it. Please let me know if you have any questions, comments regarding Helldivers. I would love to chat or anything else I talked about in this episode. That has been the Super Motion Brothers Show. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Shout out to Mitski Koela for the podcast artwork, and shout out to Thomniverse Remix for the music. Send any comments, questions, concerns to our email, thesupermotionbrothershow@gmail.com, or our Twitter account @supermotionbros. And most importantly, subscribe, leave us a review. We'd really, really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your day. We love you. Be kind. Jump up and be a goddamn superstar. I was going to do a toad voice. Should I try? What does a toad voice sound like?
I'm Mario!
No, that's not it. What does Yoshi do? No, that's not Yoshi either. I don't know, folks. We'll just stick with, Wahoo!